Our next guest is Mr. Ron Clark. Ron Clark is a lifelong falconer who has taken on all kinds of work over the years to support his obsession with birds of prey. Governor's assistant, beer server, state biologist, janitor, radio announcer, legislative aide, and professional fundraiser. He has surveyed peregrine falcons on the Yukon River and lived with Inupiaq whaling crews for three seasons on the sea ice near Point Hope. He enjoys playing handball and softball, the former better than the latter. He is a lifelong member of the oldest political satire troupe in Southeast Alaska. Well, he notes, the only political satire troupe in South Alaska. Please welcome to the stage, Ron Clark.
Well, let's get the secret out of the way right up front. I love professional wrestling. Let me qualify that. I loved professional wrestling when I was a kid in the early 60s, when it was real, not like this stuff we have now. Back then, I was about 6. My brother was about 8. We knew it wasn't real. Brian Rindall's grandfather told us it was. When that guy jumped over the edge of the ring and grabbed the bell that they ring to start and end the rounds and hits the other guy on the head, he knew it was real. But my brother and I knew better. We knew it wasn't real. We knew they shot it down at the WTCN TV studios right there on the edge of Lake Calhoun in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Channel 11. And they shot it in a studio that was probably a third the size of this room. And it was the same place where they videoed. Well, I don't know if they probably filmed it back then. It wasn't even videotape. They had a lunchtime program for kids called Lunch with Casey. Casey Jones, guy came out dressed as a railroad conductor, and we did Lunch with Casey. And every afternoon it was Popeye and Pete had a bleacher full of kids and shoved them full of candy and sugar and showed them cartoons. And then Saturday night, All-Star Wrestling. My brother and I loved All-Star Wrestling. We could be anywhere in the house, and the TV would be on, and we'd hear that, dun 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 dun. It was the theme song from All-Star Wrestling. We'd come running from wherever we were, sat down, and watched All-Star Wrestling. Now, we kind of figured that every city in America had its own version of All-Star Wrestling, and the world champion was really like just the world champion of Minneapolis. And our world champion was a guy named Vern Gagne, who was a legitimate wrestler. He wrestled in the 1948 Olympics. He was a Greco-Roman wrestler. The guy was in great shape. He looked kind of like Roy Rogers with a bald head. And he had obviously taken good care of himself, and he wrestled well, and he sold this stuff called Jera Speed in the commercials after his wrestling matches. And he'd get out there and whoop some guy and then go over to the little interview area just off from the ring and do his Jera Speed commercials and talk to Marty O'Neill, the ringside announcer, this tiny little slightly built guy with hair slicked back and horn-rimmed glasses. He was the perfect foil next to these giant wrestlers. He had this enormous microphone, and he'd sort of hold it up and hope he didn't get hurt. And Vern would get out there and talk about the match and talk about what great product Jera Speed was. So there were good guys, there were bad guys. Turns out, in the trade, they aren't good guys and bad guys. They're baby faces and heels. And Vern was a baby face. Vern was kind of the ultimate baby face because he was the ultimate good guy. There were any number of wrestlers you probably heard from. Jesse Ventura came out of that. Hulk Hogan came out of that. Andre the Giant came out of that. The Iron Sheik. Baron Von Raschke, master of the claw hold, you know. And they all fell into, most of them fell into those two categories, baby faces and heels. There were the scientific wrestlers. The ones who probably wrestled in high school or wrestled in college. And our favorite scientific wrestler was Doug Gilbert. And Marty O'Neill, without fail, every time Doug Gilbert would get into the ring, Marty O'Neill would say, yeah, you'll see more moves out of this guy in 2 minutes than most wrestlers will show you in a year. You know, without fail, Doug Gilbert would go out and actually wrestle. There was another category, and I don't know if they had a name, but they were kind of the team that the Globetrotters play. You know, they sort of wipe up the court with these guys you've never heard from. Our guy was Kenny J. Kenny J would come out, and he was dressed in long tights, which was always a dead giveaway. This guy's going to get his ass kicked. He's long tights, And Kenny J was just supremely confident. You really had to feel for the guy because they would introduce Kenny J. You know, in this corner at 137 and a half pounds is not Kenny J, but the very capable Kenny J. And Kenny J would run out to the middle of the ring and kind of throw his fist in the air like, yeah, Kenny J. And we'd all go, oh, man, Kenny J is going to get his ass kicked. You know, we just knew it. And over in this corner, and it would invariably be one of the heels, 230 pounds, Mad Dog Vachon. And Mad Dog, of all the heels, Mad Dog was a heel's heel. This guy, 5'7", 230, 235, and had more hair on his body than most people have on their head. He looked like a bear. He shaved his head, but he trimmed his beard. He had this beard that sort of ran down the edges of his jaw, and just as it reached his chin, it would come up in two little points up to the corners of his mouth, and he had this mustache, and he was missing a couple of teeth, although the rumor was, and this is one thing we did believe, the rumor was that he filed his teeth into points. And Mad Dog Vachon would be, you know, all his promotional photographs, he had fists clenched, or he was clawing with his hands, and he had chains wrapped around him, and I mean, he was just an evil-looking guy. Remember, this is like early 1960s. This is the Cold War. I mean, we knew this guy had to be a communist, man. He talked funny. You know, like Minnesotans can talk about other people talking funny, you know. But he talked funny. He was gruff, and he had this kind of weird accent. Man, he must be a Russian or a communist. And so Mad Dog would go out, and he was a good wrestler. He flew around. Man, he was amazing. He had this list of his favorite maneuvers. And I Googled him just to kind of refresh my memory. His signature move, his number one signature move, biting the opponent's forehead. That was even more prevalent than the finishing move, the pile driver, which Mad Dog was very good at. So Mad Dog goes out one night. My brother and I are watching, rapt, just totally fascinated by this. Mad Dog goes out, wipes up the floor with Kenny J or whoever it was that they put out there as cannon fodder that night, and then retires to the little interview space with Marty O'Neill. And the whole point of that was to fire people up to come to the live performance the next night at the St. Paul Civic Center or the Minneapolis Sports Arena or wherever they happened to be. And they'd taunt the crowd and get them all fired up and say, oh, come on down and see what's going on. So Mad Dog goes over to the interview room with Marty O'Neill, and Marty O'Neill is scared to death of this guy, as he should have been. I mean, he files his teeth. Come on. And Mad Dog starts making vile threats at the camera like he always does. He's, get down to the St. Paul Civic Center tomorrow night. I'm going to tear Vern Gagne apart. 12-foot chain-link fence cage. We're going to have machetes and chainsaws, and only one of us is going to come out alive, and I know it ain't going to be Vern Gagne. And Marty O'Neill is sort of shrinking in horror as he's just going on, and he's starting to froth at the mouth, and he's jumping around and getting really crazy. And this big gob of spit flies off his lower lip and makes a beautiful, perfect arc and lands directly in the middle of the lens of the camera. You can see it. It's this big gray shadow on the lens of the camera, and the whole world just stops. Mad Dog saw it. Marty saw it. The huge unblinking eye of the camera certainly saw it. And my brother and I just sat and watched, like, oh, man, what's he going to do? And the camera started to shudder. You could see it start to shake, and you could hear the director in the back cackling. Marty O'Neill looks at the ground, doesn't quite know what to do, sinks to his knees, gets out of the camera shot, crawls away on his hands and knees, leaving Mad Dog there with the great unblinking eye of the TV camera. And he gave it a shot. He really did. He tried so hard. He was going to get all fired up. Get down to the St. Paul Civic Center tomorrow night. And Mad Dog got the giggles. I'm going to tear him apart. And the poor guy is just weeping. And you can hear it. The audience has started chuckling. Everybody in the backstage crew is shuddering. And the poor guy sat there for the longest time and tried desperately to make idle, vile threats at the camera. And finally, they cut to a Gerispeed commercial and saved him. But the secret, turns out, Mad Dog was a real wrestler. Mad Dog met Vern Gagne at the 1948 Olympics. Mad Dog was a really good wrestler. And Mad Dog was a sweetheart off screen, out of the ring. He would stay till all hours of the night, signing autographs, taking care of his fans, posing for pictures, shooting beer commercials for the local bars. And he was a really sweet guy. And a little bit ago, Mad Dog got hit by a car in his home in Iowa, but it didn't stop him. He lost a leg, but Mad Dog gutted it through. He's too mean to die. He's 83 years old now, and Mad Dog, wherever you are, good on you, brother. We love you. Thank you.